and welcome to KnowlShare with Dr. Dave, hosted on GrokShare.com and available on iTunes and Google Play. This is episode number 26 with Heidi Helfand. This podcast was recorded while Heidi was driving from San Francisco to Santa Barbara. Actually, Heidi pulled over for the conference call so she could concentrate on the topic and she would not be a distracted driver. Heidi recently released her book titled Dynamic Reteaming, The Art and Wisdom of Changing Teams, published on Lean Pub. I'm certainly intrigued by the topic and look forward to reading the book and learning more from Heidi.
Let's share a few minutes about Heidi Helfand's journey and where you are currently.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm a teacher. I have a master's in teaching English that I got from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And, you know, for a few years, I taught English as a second language at the university level. It's what brought me to California from a Chicago suburb. I've lived in California for about 20 years, nearly 20 years. And I came there because I taught at University of California, Santa Barbara. And I have a former career as a teacher, and I co-authored a book called Internet for English Teaching and did some consulting for the State Department and for Fulbright. This is many years ago. And sort of by accident, I found myself in software, and I've been in the software industry for about 17 years. And for the past 17 years, I've been a part of two very successful startups. The first one, I was the 15th employee at a startup called ExpertCity.com. And at that startup, we invented GoToMeeting and GoToWebinar. So I was on software development teams for all of those products. GoToMeeting, GoToWebinar, GoToMyPC, GoToAssist, pretty much every early product from that company. I started out in the web development group as a writer. And I became a technical project manager and really worked with all the initial teams when we invented those products, you know, from the first versions and on. And I'm really proud of that company. We were acquired by Citrix, and I stayed at that company for 8 years. And it was just a really incredible journey. I was very delighted in many of the days that I spent at that company, very excited to come to work each day, love my coworkers. And at a certain point after we were acquired, I was there for, I don't know, maybe 1 or 2 years after that, I kind of lose track. And suddenly I realized that some of the early developers from the startup were going to another company. And I started to feel sad because I wanted to work with them again. And so I reached out to that second startup, which shares a co-founder with ExpertCity, Klaus Schauser. So I reached out and I said, hey, could I come too? And I was the 10th employee at that second startup. They hired me in as a scrum master. So we were agile from the start with XP practices, test-driven development. They hired me in as really the tracker role in XP. And we were engaged with Pivotal Labs. And, you know, we helped them solidify Pivotal Tracker before they sold it to, you know, out in the marketplace. We were their load testing case at one point because we had one of the largest tracker projects at AppFolio. But anyway, I was really the tracker role in XP. My title was Scrum Master. And then I became an Agile coach after a while, built an internal Agile coaching team at AppFolio. I was there for 9 years. We went public. And I recently left the company in August to become an independent consultant and trainer. And, you know, just, you know, recently, actually a few days ago, released a draft of a book that I'm calling Dynamic Reteaming, The Art and Wisdom of Changing Teams. I just released that on LeanPub, and I'm writing a lot about the experiences that I've had in the past with teams that change as opposed to stay the same. And yeah, really excited to be on this part of my journey. I have a lot more freedom to do what I want, a lot more intellectual freedom. And yep, that really motivates me to get up early in the morning and do things. So
that's fabulous. I didn't know you were fighting Illini.
Yeah, I am an Illini. I am also a Hawkeye. My bachelor's is from University of Iowa. So I wound up at two different Big Ten schools. But yes, I am an Illini. And it was actually, are you an Illini?
No, I just lived in Chicago for a while, for about 10 years. So I know lots about the schools around the area.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was actually really exciting when I was at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign because I was there when Mosaic was invented. You know, nice. Mosaic, right?
Yeah.
So right when the web was coming out, I was teaching English in a computer lab, and I was, you know, my area was integrating the internet and computers into computer-assisted language learning was my research focus in graduate school. And suddenly we got this thing called Mosaic in the computer labs. And before I knew it, I was teaching HTML. I was arguing my case to do a case study about using email in teaching English as my master's thesis. I had to switch advisors because my first advisor was very certain that email was a fad. So I had to fight my way through keeping my topic. And I did. I did get my topic because this guy was like, work with this other professor. And that professor was studying the diffusion of innovations theory and how it applies to curriculum development, which was very useful years later because it was all about change management and change theory. So I got a lot of some foundational reading in that in grad school. But at any rate, you know, that it was, I think my degree was awarded in 97, but I think I was in graduate school for a few years. I really enjoyed it and really got into the research. And as you probably remember from that time,
yep.
You know, Yahoo was a project at Stanford with a couple students. I remember I used to have my students create web pages about their countries. You know, I was teaching foreign students English that were studying at University of Illinois. When I was learning, I was teaching while I was learning how to teach English. And so the students would create web pages. We made this global travel guide where they'd write articles about their countries, and they'd also do research on the internet to find stuff about their countries. And sometimes it was really difficult because there wasn't information about their countries yet on the web because everything was so new. So,
how interesting is that? But let's pivot and talk about describe reteaming, and you know, what's the origin of that concept? I know this is something that you're passionate about. Tell us more about reteaming.
Yeah, reteaming. So, you know, upon reflection, especially at the second startup at AppFolio, you know, I was there from the original team to more than 30 software development teams, cross-functional agile teams, you know, for 9 years. And a couple of times we doubled in size, and we've always been a very adaptive organization. And I remember at some point, I think it was about a year ago, someone said to me at a conference, like, you know, you know, everybody talks about having teams that are stable, teams that stay the same. And upon reflection, I'm thinking to myself, well, we always paired. We always pair program. Then we always switch pairs. And as we, you know, we had our first team, the team grew and split into two teams. And soon we had three teams. And we were growing so fast by adding in engineers that, you know, I define it, you know, a team is a group of people working on a shared goal, such as creating software. And you have each team has a unique team system, or some call it a team entity. And it only takes one person to change that dynamic of a team. So if you have an existing team, you add one new person in, you have a new team. If you have an existing team and one person leaves, the team dynamic is different. You have a new team. And so, you know, over the years, our teams would be in a constant state of change. And some teams would change faster than others. And it was really the norm. And, you know, looking back, you know, I even would see, like, there's like a Scrum patterns community. I'd read the Scrum pattern about having stable teams. And I think it gets misinterpreted about keeping your teams the same. And the fact is, upon reflection, I was at a very successful company that dynamically changed teams at different rates for more than 9 years. The company went public last year. You know, we've been changing teams the whole time. And so, you know, I just don't agree that the best teams need to be stable all the time. I don't think that people come and go from your companies. Having teams that never change, I don't think is that real? So I got interested in this topic of, okay, well, in my personal experience, I've noticed all of this. Let me start talking to people. So I did a case study about the reteaming patterns at AppFolio. It was an experience report for Agile 2016. I did qualitative research. I interviewed 16 plus people for an hour in that organization. I got a lot of unique stories and derived patterns about different ways that teams have changed over the years. For example, there's like the grow and split pattern. A team grows bigger, splits in two or splits in three. That's a pattern that I'm seeing at other companies as well. And so on. There's, from the first, after the first team split into two, and then we had the third team, there were some challenges in terms of fulfillment of the engineers. We were used to switching pairs all of the time and getting to work with a lot of different people. And then when we split into separate teams, there was a great feeling of loss among some of our engineers that, you mean I don't get to work with that person anymore? We don't get to pair anymore because they're on a different team. And, there was like these feelings of sadness that, okay, I'll see my friend in the building, but I don't get to, we don't get to connect our brains like we've been doing and as we like when we pair program. Yeah. And so the engineers, upon having retrospectives, engineers decided that we're going to have a regular rotation from team to team. So every couple of weeks, we're going to rotate one engineer from team A to team B to team C. And so that was another reteaming pattern that emerged, which was regular rotation of engineers. And so the problem was not being able to pair with people that you want to pair with, not being able to learn from your peers or from certain individuals. And that led to dissatisfaction. So the solution that emerged in the context was the reteaming pattern of rotating from team to team at a regular cadence. And so there was that. And, countless other stories. And some of them I have in the Dynamic Reteaming book that's on LeanPub. And, so it all kind of started with personal reflection at this one company. And then I started hearing stories from other people. And so for the book, what I'm doing is I'm interviewing people at a whole host of different companies, such as Spotify. I interviewed someone there.
Nice.
Chef, which is based out of Seattle. I interviewed last week. I interviewed Richard Sheridan from Menlo Innovations. I interviewed someone from Hunter Industries to get some mob programming stories. They have some interesting patterns in that environment. Yeah, I interviewed Sandy Mamoli. She wrote a great book called Creating Great Teams that talks about people self-selecting into teams as opposed to being assigned into teams by managers. Mm-hmm. And there's just a wealth of different stories to tell and to share in our industry, which I think has been, very much, it's okay to adapt the requirements in Agile. For example, one change from Waterfall to Agile is that, I don't know if you remember working in Waterfall and we'd have, all right, write your spec, get the spec signed off, estimate how long it's going to take. Okay, go build, go write the development specs about what you're going to build and keep everything in change control. And it's kind of like fight any change to requirements. And kind of one gift that we got from Agile was, all right, cool. Now we get to reprioritize requirements much more frequently than in the past. And that, makes it a lot easier for us to be responsive to customers and whatnot. But I think, so we've become a lot more adaptive with requirements and with prioritization, but yet less adaptive in terms of our teams. And, the fact is we learn a lot from other people. I mean, imagine if you were on one team for years and years and years, and you didn't get to learn from that new person that came over from that other company. You go to a conference, it really illustrates the point very well. If you're on one conference session and you for a week and you couldn't switch to any other conference session, you missed out all the learning from the other people. I think, as humans, we learn in many different ways. We learn from input. We learn from books. We learn from podcasts. We learn taking classes, many different ways. But there's such a richness when we get to work with different people and learn from different people. And I think, you know, by enabling our people to change teams, especially for career development and whatnot, it really can add to fulfillment in our lives. And if we're pigeonholed into being the guy that works on the printer software, and we're not able to change and work on another area of the software, we're really doing this person a disservice. And actually, it's quite risky for companies. You know, you can create knowledge silos by not changing teams. We live that with the first startup. You know, we had, I remember when people started leaving the first startup that were working on commerce-related pieces, we had these towers of knowledge, as Richard Sheridan calls them, these towers of knowledge, these knowledge silos that would leave out the building with people, you know. When we reteam and when we dynamically reteam, it's one way to kind of combat the knowledge silos, to spread out the institutional knowledge and to kind of keep it in the building. So it's really, you know, reteaming is an awesome strategy for reducing risk of information loss. It's also an awesome strategy for combating attrition and keeping our software engineers and other team members motivated in their work. You know, we grow and change as humans, and to kind of keep us in one place all the time with less learning is really doing the humans a disservice. So there's a lot of reteaming for fulfillment stories in the book.
And, I mean, that's really great to hear. One of the things I would like to look at is that, you know, how does reteaming challenge the thought that we should be co-located teams as one aspect of that?
Well, you can... you know, I was interviewing someone yesterday from a company, a DevOps supply chain company in Florida, and they're all remote and they reteam. You don't have to be physically present in a building in order to change teams or to work on different teams. It's actually, so, you know, it's interesting. At AppFolio and at some other companies I've talked with, when the people reteam, they physically change their location in their office. So maybe the co-located team, so it's like there's like a physical manifestation of the reteaming. At AppFolio, when we would change teams, we would keep the desks in their places, but we'd take all of our stuff when we'd move to the new team area. So if I was on team Foo Fighters and I moved to team Def Leppard, I'd take all my stuff and I'd move over there. And we'd get really good at moving from team area to team area, and you'd pare down the stuff that you had on your desk. And, you know, I could move all my stuff in 20 minutes, you know, and I'd make it a game and I'd try to do it and beat my time from the last time. A company I talked with yesterday, when they reteam, well, they're all still sitting there in their home offices. So it's more logistical. They join a new HipChat channel. They get the new meeting invites for the other team. So it's very much like, it's not such a physical manifestation. It's more, you know, what is the meeting ID that you need to join for this new team? You know, what's the HipChat? What are the communication channels that they use that are online? What are the, you know, documents or artifacts or calendar things that you need to get? So it's just a different kind of reteaming. And then there are hybrid environments where you have people that are remote and people that are in person. And so it could be an adjustment for a team that's used to being in person to suddenly have a team member that's remote all the time. They need to, you know, really prioritize and get good at connecting in their remote team member to level the playing field. You know, we would use a lot of video to bring our remote friends in the room. So, you know, it could be a challenge if a co-located team is not used to having a remote team member and then a remote team member reteams onto their team. But there, you know, there are a lot of, you know, great deliberate activities that you could do to help speed up any of these logistical things as well as the gelling of the teams. There's a section in my book about that too.
Awesome. So let's talk about Bruce Tuckman's model of forming, storming, norming, performing. And I think they've added a joining. But how does that affect team dynamics when you have this new composition as you look at Tuckman's model?
Yeah. I've got a couple of things to say about Tuckman's model. The first thing is that it's a little known fact that there's a phase in his model that's missing, and it's the phase called stagnating. It's when people stay on a team for too long and they lose motivation or interest. Maybe they're there and they're just going through the motions. Someone maybe told them they had to stay on that team and they really don't, they're not interested in working with the people that are on the team or maybe the subject matter. So I think before adjourning, you could have teams that are stagnating and the learning is stopped, or the learning is like so much slower. They're not learning fast enough. It's not a high energy situation in which the people are not excited to come to work each day. So I think when teams are together too long, they can stagnate. And I don't think, necessarily that all teams will get to a state where they're delivering awesome, value to their customers. Sometimes the chemistry is off. I don't think reteaming is not the solution to every problem. I mean, I think in some cases, there are other solutions when the team dynamics are off. Maybe you could try some other sort of intervention to maybe get the team on track, but reteaming is a valid option to consider, which hasn't been on the table as, with equal representation, maybe as other coaching approaches. But so one, I think there's the stagnating phase is definitely missing. The second thing is, forming, storming, norming, performing. This came out in the 70s. This is like friend of waterfall. Waterfall is another linear model. We got these two linear models coming out at the same, must have been hip at that time to have linear models. But I don't know about you, but it would be awesome if we got our teams together and they stormed once and they were done with it. And then they were performing and, everything, it's like so simplistic. The fact is when we're creating products, and I know this from personal experience, working, with teams, I've been a practitioner working with teams for 17 years. People don't, when you're creating products and you're devising unique solutions and there's uncertainty, we go through, like a groan zone. So Sam Kainer in his book, yeah, Facilitator's Guide to Participatory Decision-Making, talks about different types of meetings and other facilitation patterns. But one thing he talks about is, teams coming together to talk about perhaps product development. We'll use that as an example. And, during the discussions, there are divergent thoughts and maybe disagreements. And we get good at and help teams to have productive disagreements as coaches. And at some point they'll converge on ideas and maybe make some decisions about how to move forward. But, the fact is we're kind of storming, very iteratively, and we're doing it around our product development. And so we don't do it once and get it over with. Tuckman did his research on therapy groups.
Yeah.
And, it's not so similar to software development. And so I think for our context, it's very handy to talk about that model. It's very catchy. And, it's very intuitive that a team would get together and form, or we want performing teams. Like, I think there's some elements that are definitely helpful and useful, but I just think that it's a bit simplistic. And, there are things that you can do to speed up the gel of a team. So, people might say, oh, Heidi, reteaming is costly. We have to help the teams form and get along with each other. Well, there are things that you can put in place in your organizations if you're an adaptive organization to foster camaraderie, to foster relationship building. Like we had something akin to a Spotify tribe. If you use like a model like that, where you have clusters of teams together as a unit, you can build these communities of people that know and care about each other. And then everything else is easier. Switching teams for one would be easier. They already know and care and trust each other because they're part of a group, so you can facilitate community building as a deliberate strategy, and then moving people around is a lot easier. And that notion of, well, Heidi, they have to form the teams in gel. Well, they might already trust each other if they've already collaborated with each other, or they sit in close proximity, or they're part of the same team building events. We would do very specific things for that to build our communities that up fully. And in fact, we would have a cross company guacamole making competition to facilitate this kind of team bonding across departments. Now they have it across, they have it in their Santa Barbara office, in their Dallas office, in their San Diego office. I mean, taking the time to deliberately foster community building just makes reteaming not a big deal.
So talk to me about failure cases. Reteaming, certainly in some contexts, happens when corporations fire all of the head people who are working for them. That's one form of it. Well, that's an extreme form of it. But in your context, where have you seen reteaming have failures or struggles for people to adopt to this new way of working or thinking about things?
Yeah, I think, sometimes people have a very mechanistic view of teams and organizations as opposed to a humanistic view. If we treat people like objects, put them on teams without their input, we might have some problems. You know, conversely, if we take a humanistic approach and we get to know the people, what motivates them, what their learning goals are, what the needs are on the teams, we could have more success. Sandy Mamoli, and we were talking yesterday, and she was talking about every 6 months at this company that she was with, they would self-select into teams. They would have a facilitated event in a big space in which they put like cards on the walls representing work areas that were upcoming with, and maybe product owners were available to give people information about what the projects were like. And then, the people could go around and put their names on the cards to choose the teams that they wanted to be on, that they wanted to work on. So it's more of an invitation-based approach mm-hmm. to change, which, it's the open space community talks about the concept of invitation. When you invite people in to opt in to do something, it's inherently more respectful of the people as opposed to kind of pushing them into places. And so I think, giving people the opportunity to volunteer in to teams could be very helpful. But then there are also, I think, some very thoughtful approaches with managers who have amazing relationships with the people that they work with. I'm not saying that, only do the self-selected way. It depends on the context and what works for the people. I think there are I've met a lot of very thoughtful managers that have an ongoing conversation with the people that work for them. And they, have a vested, very caring interest about helping these people find the right team situation for now. And, I say now kind of like I would write it in quotes. It's kind of like this person, Joe, where is he in his development? What's the best team situation for him now? What is he most interested in learning about now? Okay, he might be me, the manager, I know the context, maybe Joe's a new hire, and there's a great mentor over here that can work with Joe. This is the best team situation for him. And so we can have facilitated situations in which people are put on teams in a very caring and respectful way. And so that also works, but that person, Joe, maybe 6 months from now, if he has a very healthy ongoing conversation with his manager, he might learn of other opportunities that are coming up. The manager might, for example, and say, hey, Joe, I know you were really interested in learning React. This team is working on this new project with it. Would you be willing to consider changing to this team? So managers can, awesome managers can really be advocates for team members and helping them find the best situation for them. Because it could be the case where you have a new person come and they just, maybe they could get an idea of, maybe this team would be right for me, but maybe they need some help and advice from an awesome manager.
So I have a question for you. Yeah. Let you finish your thought and then I'll ask you this question. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, I think there's, when we come from a humanistic stance and we really care about the people and are looking to grow people and to help people continually learn and to come with trust and respect, I think, reteamings or other initiatives that companies can go really well. When we treat people like objects and we want to try to find fast ways, plug people in, change it up, not let them know what's going on in advance, things can go terribly wrong. I mean, I didn't originally think that, I've learned a lot after reflecting about this topic for the past year. And I really kind of originally thought that like reorgs were out of this territory, but they are very much part of the reteaming space. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot that we can do as coaches to help companies come from, the most humanistic approach possible, when going through, big scale company changes You know, my space is more from startup to, I don't know, companies of 600. As I collect more and more stories, you know, reorg stories are coming in, and there are patterns that are coming up from those too. And when I say pattern, I mean, when people are, people from different companies are telling me about the same kind of thing, I take note of it and note it in the book.
That's great. So tell me what's next for reteaming, and how is it being received as a new way to form teams?
Yeah, so, you know, I think the fact is that, you know, people have been reteaming this whole time and maybe not realizing it, because again, the addition of one person means you have a new team. The removal or the loss of one person means you have a new team. There are deliberate things that you can do to acknowledge those changes in teams, you know, and it could be even more dramatic than that. You know, suddenly you have five people start on the same day. You have 20 people start on the same day. What do you do with that? I'm a coach, you know, I coach individuals, I coach teams, and I coach the teams as a system, coach the dynamic. And, you know, acknowledging and helping the teams realize that their system has changed and how do we want to be together as a team and what are the agreements that we want. You know, you can do chartering, you can do other deliberate activities to help the teams have greater success. So I think that it's been here all along. And now I think the difference is that the stories are being shared. And, you know, I get really excited when I'm sharing these stories. And one reason is because I interviewed two different people. It was someone from Spotify and someone from Chef. And I just recently introduced them to each other because they have kind of similar reteaming patterns going on. So it's a way for me to connect people. And that makes me happy when I help people like that. So I think what's next is, you know, I have more interviews coming up for the book. The book is on LeanPub, and I continue to release versions of it and trying to take more of a modern agile approach to the book now.
Nice.
Also, I've been trying to deliver value continuously and experiment and learn rapidly with this topic. And yeah, so you'll see more book versions out from me, and just really pumped about that. I have a queue of stories waiting to be written, so it's really motivating every day to get up and try to integrate them into the book.
Well, I'm pumped for you too. So, you know, how does my audience get out and learn more about your book? You may maybe even reach out to you if you want them to do that. Why don't you share that information such that people who are on iTunes or Google Play would also get an opportunity to tap into this great wealth of knowledge that you're sharing?
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I guess the best place as of now is just to go to my website, HeidiHelfand.com. And maybe you can put that, write that near this podcast
label
or something. HeidiHelfand.com. Mm-hmm. You can follow me on Twitter. Is at HeidiHelfand is my Twitter name.
And Helfand is spelled H-E-L. F-A-N-D.
Yep. H-E-L, F as in Frank, A-N-D. Heidi Helfand, yep. At Heidi Helfand.
Nice. Nice. Well, you know what? Hey, thank you so much. I know you're like cruising along or somewhere out there. I forgot where you even told me where you were coming from and going to. I know you're going to Santa Barbara. But
yep, I'm leaving San Francisco, driving to Santa Barbara, and I'm stopped in... I don't even know where I am. Somewhere along the way.
Isn't that beautiful, though?
Yeah.
You know, stop along and have a dialogue on a podcast.
Yeah, it's the wonders of the internet.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So thank you so much. I'm going to stop recording. And
okay. Thank you, Dave.
To learn more about Heidi, visit her website at www.HeidiHelfand.com. And you could search for her book, Dynamic Reteaming, The Art and Wisdom of Changing Teams, published on LeanPub via Google. Tweet with Heidi at Heidi Helfand on Twitter. Look for the Knowledge Share with Dr. Dave podcast on iTunes and Google Play. The Knowledge Share with Dr. Dave podcast is hosted on grokshare.com. If you have any questions for Dr. Dave, reach out on Twitter at Dr. Dave Info or at Knowledge Share. This podcast and interview produced by Dr. Dave Cornelius. Copyright 2016, Knoll Share.
You grok share?
I grok it and Knoll Share. Every day, every day. Until next time, pursue goodness, share, and learn.